I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Tensions continue to build between the United States and Iran following the U.S. strike that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani last week. Over the past few days, dozens of Iranian Americans say they've faced extensive questioning at U.S. border checkpoints.
On Saturday, we started getting reports of people being held at the border, people being detained, people being questioned about their political beliefs, about how do they feel about the situation.
That's Mana Karazi, the executive director of Iranian Alliances Across Borders, and we'll hear more from her later in the hour. We're also hearing from our Iranian-American listeners on this.
Hi, my name is Kiana, and I'm an Iranian-American. I am one of many silent but present Iranians who are thrilled at the news. While this might lead us into war, so many Iranians and people who are fighting for freedom across the world are excited to hear that the U.S. is taking action to bring down a horrible, horrible militant.
And over in Iran, a public funeral was held in Qasem Soleimani's hometown of Kerman. According to Iranian state television, stampedes broke out in the crowd of tens of thousands, and dozens have been reported dead. So far, Iranian and American media reports from Iran have depicted mass demonstrations and support for Soleimani, and a country largely united in its opposition to the United States. But our next guest says escalating tensions are also putting Iranians in danger. The Iranian-American journalist Jason Rezaian knows the internal workings of the Iranian government very well. He spent 544 days as a hostage of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in Iran. Today, Jason is global opinions writer for The Washington Post, and he joins me now. Jason, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Hi, Tanzina. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. And you have said that the killing of Soleimani could be the most consequential moment in U.S.-Iran relations in 40 years. Tell us more about that.
Well, look, we've been in a sort of prolonged, protracted, cold battle with Iran for that entire period of time, since essentially the U.S. embassy was taken over by Iranian revolutionary students in 1979, and 52 diplomats were held hostage, as everyone knows. You know, there's been skirmishes, there's been direct conflict from time to time, but this is the first time we've seen such high-level action against such a key figure of the Iranian regime being targeted, frankly, of either the Iranian regime or the U.S. government being targeted in this way. So I think you can't look at it anything other than really the most dramatic event that's happened between the two countries in all this time.
And Jason, as we mentioned, in 2014, you were arrested by Iranian police. You were held hostage for 544 days. How did that experience impact your perspective into the current situation today?
Well, look, I had been living and working in Iran as a journalist for 5 years leading up to that. I've been traveling back and forth between the U.S. and Iran for over a decade when that happened. So I had a good sense of not only what life was like inside Iran and the restrictions that people live under, I also had a very clear view of tensions between the two governments. What I didn't have was that direct experience of being personally suppressed and abused by that regime. I have that in spades now, and I'm no friend of this regime. I would like to see them removed from the scene at some point in the not-so-distant future, and Iranians be allowed to live in a secular, democratic society. But in the meantime, there is so much, so many hurdles between where they are right now and the possible democratic future that so many of us aspire to for Iranians, that I'm just really concerned about the consequences that it'll have for ordinary people. The potential for conflict, for more sanctions, and, you know, as we heard in the intro, about, you know, ramifications against Iranian Americans in this country by our own U.S. government.
Given your experience, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what calculations you think Iran's top leaders are making now when they're thinking about their next moves.
So I think oftentimes, you know, it's pretty clear to everyone that Iran does not have the same kind of military might that the United States does. No government, no country has the might that we do. So you can't expect them to play in normal circumstances by normal rules. What they tend to do is take steps that are audacious in nature. I would say that abducting and holding hostage the correspondent or bureau chief for the Washington Post for a year and a half during very high-level negotiations between the two countries is an audacious act, one that's designed to grab attention and fuel emotions. I think we can probably expect to see a similar response, and I don't think it's going to happen over the next couple of days. It'll probably happen over a period of weeks and months. You know, in the past, they've tried to hide their fingerprints and create a sense of plausible deniability, and kind of deflect blame onto regional proxies of theirs. I'm not sure that that'll be the case this time around. I think that there'll be a direct response, and it could happen against targets in the region, against American citizens at different points in the world, against high-level officials. It could also take place in cyberspace. There's a whole range of possibilities. But, the one thing that I don't expect is a full-on military attack mounted by the Iranians against U.S. interests.
We've seen reports coming out of Iran that depict at least mass mourning and mass unification against the United States so far. But there are Iranian dissidents in the country, and I'm wondering how they've been reacting to Soleimani's death and whether they will continue to be able to meaningfully criticize the government in Iran right now.
Unfortunately, people are not able to openly and meaningfully criticize the government there. One of the things that has been a hallmark of the last decade or so in Iran is really the removal of internal dissent. A lot of people who were involved in the protest movements in 2009 following the contested and fraudulent re-election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad ended up in prison. Many others have ended up in exile. So, most of the opposition that we hear from is not based in the country anymore at this point. That being said, there's a lot of people who are vehemently opposed to even the idea of the Islamic Republic. Some always have been, and increasingly as the situation internally in the country has gotten more difficult for people, people are turning away from it. But I think that I would caution against perceptions of the situation as wholly one way or the other. Iran is a society like any other countries in the world that has a multitude of opinions and points of view of its citizenry. Certainly there are people who are vocally opposed to the regime and have been willing in vast numbers over the recent months and weeks to go out in the streets and protest against the regime. There are also, as we're seeing right now, people who support the regime. And people have support for the regime for a whole host of different reasons. So I think it's a bit disingenuous by a lot of analysts to say that the entire country is mourning the death of this general. That's certainly not true. It's just as disingenuous to say that all Iranians are opposed to the regime, and those who are out in the street right now at these mourning rituals are there because they've been compelled or forced to go.
Soleimani also consolidated Shiite power in the region, and he had real influence in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen. What does his death mean, Jason, for those countries and for the region?
I think for in the short term, those groups of Shias in neighboring countries will be looking to Tehran to see if the new general, Ghani, will be a sufficient replacement for Qasem Soleimani. He has a huge shoes to fill, and I think that there will be a lot of skepticism from regional partners of Iran about whether or not this new general can take his place. That being said, no military is based on one person, right? They've created a cult of personality around this General Soleimani, but I don't think Iran's strategy in that region is going to change significantly in the months to come.
You've also spoken to career U.S. government officials. We know so far that the Trump administration has had a tense relationship with its diplomatic corps so far. What are government officials telling you about the strike against Iran from a national security perspective?
Well, Tanzina, I think it's safe to say that the two previous administrations had a whole host of contingency plans of how to deal with different sorts of attacks from Iran. They assessed threat levels on a daily and hourly basis. And with the national security, former national security officials that I spoke to over the past few days, they all told me that at various points over the last decade or more, they had the opportunity to target and kill General Soleimani. They chose not to do that because they thought that the risks of a potential fallout of such a move were too great and too unknown. And I think that the fact is, and I haven't heard anybody argue convincingly otherwise, the U.S. government right now under President Trump has no real idea what's going to happen next. And for those of us who are very skeptical of the Trump administration, there are those of us who believe that that they're trying to provoke Iran into a greater conflict. Now, it depends a lot on how Iran decides to respond to this current situation. But the one thing that I would say is that the idea that a wider conflict with Iran would lead to prospects for a better future for that country are very unconvincing. If you look at the two countries to Iran's southwest and to its northeast, Iraq and Afghanistan, you will see what sort of consequences these sort of imposed regime changes have had just in our own recent past. So, you know, I think we should be very cautious about next steps. And I think keeping the possibility for diplomatic resolutions always has to be front and center in your mind, whether or not you intend to go to open conflict with a country or not.
Because of the gravity of the situation, how do you think the media can cover this issue responsibly without being alarmist or without repeating the same mistakes in the past?
Well, look, I think we always have to be very careful of not being just a megaphone for what the administration is saying. And, you know, when we invite top leaders onto influential programs, as is often the case, and they take that opportunity, especially when they've avoided those opportunities in the not so distant past, have to be super skeptical about what they say and call them out on, for lack of a better term, their BS. And I think that's sort of very essential right now in this moment. I mean, we have the tendency of becoming fearful and alarmed very quickly. And I worry that colleagues in the media, especially on television, play into that far too much. On the flip side of that, when correspondents are dispatched to Iran, we have to understand that non-resident journalists, especially U.S. ones who are visiting there, are not allowed to openly report from all points in the country. There are people there from major news organizations right now this week who had visas to go there before the killing of General Soleimani, who's, you know, had a great journalistic opportunity to go to Iran and cover unfolding events there. Well, what they'll find when they get on the ground is they're not free to turn left if their minders tell them to turn right. They're not allowed to go to certain points of the country. They're not allowed generally outside of Tehran, the capital. So it's a very stylized and manicured situation.
Jason Rezaian is Global Opinions writer for The Washington Post. Jason, thanks so much.
My pleasure.